Injury update here for you. Ed Oliver will not practice today, out for the game. The rest of the guys that you probably have in your minds, Khalil, James Cook, Taron Johnson, Austin Johnson, will all be questionable and limited today in some fashion, and we'll just see how it goes.
That was head coach Sean McDermott today. So Ed Oliver is out. James Cook, Khalil Shakir, Taron Johnson, Austin Johnson officially going to be questionable, according to head coach Sean McDermott, who spoke with the media today. And, well, I guess it could be a heck of a lot worse on the injury report there than that. Not having Ed Oliver again will be something that I know that I will miss, and hopefully the team can survive, especially against the Jets' run offense that has been, well, let's put it frankly, bad this year. So maybe there's something there that is the silver lining. Khalil Shakir, James Cook, those two need to be in this game, because without them, there's a little bit of a punchless attack potentially for the Bills against the New York Jets on Monday night. I talked last segment with Howard about how the last 2 weeks in Buffalo sports have been, dreadful, terrible, awful, whatever kind of synonym you want to come up with for it. It's not been good. It's not been a fun time. It's been, as one future segment might say, booty cheeks. So when times get tough, what do the good people of Gotham do when there's a tough situation and you need someone to be able to help bail them out of it? It's our emotions and our logic that needs bailing out of. And I turn to the Bruce signal, not the bat signal. I turn to the Bruce signal because I got Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive on with us now on the Western Hotline. Bruce.
is that the official ask for help? Is that,
yes, I think that's it.
It's been a challenge over the last couple of weeks, and I think that one of the things that's been the most challenging is that for many people, the entire off season was spent kind of worried about a very specific thing, and now it's not like what the Buffalo Bills are seeing on offense as far as challenges go is different than that thing. It's exactly what they were worried about. So it's almost like you feel negatively validated, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I'd much rather be surprised by something that is going wrong that I didn't predict than I would have something going, oh no, all the things we were scared about are now manifesting. We were right to be scared because then it validates future fears. So for a lot of people, that was, okay, you know, are you going to be able to have the receiving core necessary to be able to go get yourself a bucket? And for the Buffalo Bills over the last 2 weeks, you know, with the absence of Khalil Shakir and the presence of defenses who are like, you know what, we're just going to man you up and see if you can win, the Buffalo Bills have seen struggles in the passing attack. And when you have that going into a game against the New York Jets, who you know very well are very willing to just straight up man you up, that makes you a little bit concerned. And so earlier in the year, you saw the picks, you saw the rubs, you see the yak, you saw the ways you can counter getting manned up, and those things just weren't working over the last couple of weeks against the Ravens and the Texans. And so people feel like, oh no, this is what I was scared of the whole time.
And, I mean, the fears and, like you said, the negative validations kind of were even enhanced and strengthened last week when Khalil Shakir was out of the lineup against the Houston Texans. Shakir officially questionable for Monday night here, according to head coach Sean McDermott. He'll be practicing today in some fashion along with James Cook, Taron Johnson, and Austin Johnson. Bruce, how important has Khalil Shakir been, and was that importance magnified without his presence last week?
Very, and yes. Khalil Shakir is one of the players on this offense, one of the dwindling amounts of players who you can ask to go get you a bucket. And when I say get you a bucket, obviously we're talking about kind of isolation basketball terms. And hey, if I'm manned up, you can just count on him to be a first read and to separate and deliver the ball, and he's going to catch it. And so as you think back to Buffalo Bills offenses of past. And you think about the Josh Allen rookie year offense, where you had Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes as your two starting outside receivers. And then you look at the Buffalo Bills offense now, and you have Keon Coleman and Mac Hollins as your two starting outside receivers, who I think are more gifted than Andre Holmes and Kelvin Benjamin, but similar in archetype. And then you look at that and you go, uh-oh, it didn't really start working until John Brown, Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs. You ended up with different man separators. Now, Josh Allen's a very different quarterback than he was at that stage in his career. So it's almost like, okay, well, now that you have a more mature quarterback, you know, let's circle back and see if it maybe works a little better this time. And with the absence of Khalil Shakir, it didn't work a little better. And part of that's on personnel, part of that's on scheme, part of that's on Joe Brady not giving Josh Allen easy buttons early in drives to be able to kind of get the rhythm going. Part of that's on Josh Allen not being as patient and mature the last couple of weeks because he was facing man coverage. But Khalil Shakir is the kind of archetype holdover from the Beasley, John Brown, Stephon Diggs archetype of receiver. He's that carryover who you can count to just separate against man coverage and go get you a bucket. And without him, the hope was it was going to be Curtis Samuel. Even Sean McDermott himself said when Khalil Shakir got hurt, it was, well, we're grateful we have Curtis, as if that we were going to see a similar role, and that's just not kind of the way it manifested itself. So if Curtis Samuel wasn't getting used, and your two main outside receivers are not really at the stage in their careers right now, Mac Holland is probably not that guy at this point, and Keon Holt-Coleman is very new to the NFL, then who can you count on to go do that? And the answer is, if you don't have Khalil Shakir, and you're not really using Curtis Samuel in that role and targeting him early in the progression, nobody. And we see what happens when the answer is nobody.
What's up with that, by the way? It's one of the most infuriating things that I've seen this season, and one of the few things about Joe Brady that has almost got me going into calling him Joseph at this point to scold him. Curtis Samuel is not being used as a standard wide receiver or early in the progression, as you're mentioning. And when he is early or getting targets primarily, it's screens and swing routes and not working.
I don't know exactly, but I do know that what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of answers that you saw earlier. Do you remember a couple years back when the narrative was, how are the Buffalo Bills going to handle cover zero and cover one? And they kind of had this go-to screen pass for John Brown that they would kind of use. It ended up being a long touchdown at one point, and that was kind of their go-to fix. Well, what you saw is you saw Josh Allen check into that a couple times with Curtis Samuel. And so that makes you wonder what the route would have been if he hadn't checked into that. Maybe that would have skewed the numbers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have more answers to cover one in a spy or cover zero than just, I'm going to check to this flare screen. Like, there has to be more to it than that. And my concern is if you're leaning really heavily on Curtis Samuel to be the answer for those specific things with that specific play, then every time you do that, or every time you need to make sure that he's available to do things like that, that means there's less of those intermediate dig routes which you can use. And, I mean, if you think about the last offensive play that the Buffalo Bills ran against the Houston Texans, Curtis Samuel was open. Josh Allen just missed him. I think the narrative could be a lot different if Josh Allen doesn't get a left tackle that gets pushed back into him against the Houston Texans in his own end zone and is able to hit Curtis Samuel on that dig route against the Houston Texans and get the first down. I think the narrative looks a lot different if that one play goes different. And so that's the kind of thing where he was open. Like, that's the kind of thing you can use, and you can count on him to be able to get those wins. And I think one of the things else that you got to see is that Keon Coleman's route tree wasn't overly diverse. And if you have someone who can't just go ahead and separate quickly, if you're going to run a lot of single high, one of the things that was kind of the antithesis to single high cover three looks with the old Legion of Boom was those big deep overs. We've actually seen Keon Coleman score a touchdown on those big deep overs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things you didn't see at all there wasn't a single deep over from Keon Coleman against the Texans. So I think Joe Brady has some, we need a different set of answers, because you can't keep going back to the well and hoping your pick plays and your screen plays are going to be able to get you the answer against man coverage and single high.
And that might also just be, you know, it's been a minute since he's been the O coordinator for a team, and he didn't really have a very long stay with it in Carolina either. So maybe it's shaking the cobwebs off. I'm crossing my fingers on that part there, Bruce, that things will steady up here in terms of using Curtis Samuel normally like an actual wide receiver, and for Keon Coleman to get better looks as well. Having Shakir in the lineup probably changes the dynamic a little bit, allows for things to get better for this team. But the other thing here is possibly no James Cook either. Which impact would be felt far greater for this offense? No Khalil Shakir again or no James Cook?
Khalil Shakir. I think that James Cook has been a good running back for the Buffalo Bills. I think that the offensive line is good enough in run blocking to be able to get passable production from multiple different types of running backs. James Cook has been a good player for the Buffalo Bills. But Khalil Shakir, in his absence, robs you of what we just talked about. It robs you of basically anybody who can just go get you a bucket against man coverage. And against the New York Jets, that's going to be extremely important. You don't invest the resources that you invest in DJ Reed and in Sauce Gardner and then decide against a team that's proven a weakness against man coverage that you're just going to go ahead and run quarters the entire game. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So I think it's more important than ever that you have Khalil Shakir, or else you could be looking at another tough day from a passing attack from Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills passing offense.
Now let's look at the other side here, because the Bills passing attack has obviously struggled these past couple games. However, the New York Jets, even with the presence of Aaron Rodgers, haven't been what I'd call particularly better, especially in London against the Minnesota Vikings. Aaron Rodgers very much struggled. He did help them get back into that game, but a lot of picks for him, unnatural almost to say for Rodgers, but the offensive line of the New York Jets is still the biggest problem, like everyone thought it would be.
I think coming into the year, there was hope that what the New York Jets did to invest, because they have 3 out of 5 new starters coming into the year on the New York Jets offensive line, there was hope that, okay, this is going to keep Aaron Rodgers upright enough. But those, a lot of those players were players that were meaningful veterans or were players that were a little up there in age. They weren't necessarily preferred starters by a lot of other teams. They either let them go or they were not overly upset to see them go. And so I think that you were definitely getting an upgrade, but you weren't getting an upgrade from okay to good. You were getting an upgrade from absolutely abysmal to less than abysmal, better than that, but still not ideal. And I think that's what you're seeing. And you combine that with the extremely static offense that the New York Jets have been running, which is, I think, a preferred Aaron Rodgers style. I think we've seen offenses trend in that way. And I made the comment about go get in your bucket. For the New York Jets offense, you know, it's always been go get me a half bucket with Aaron Rodgers. That's always it is. It relies on the wide receivers to win, and then Aaron Rodgers' immaculate ball placement to be able to say, you don't even have to get me a bucket, just get me a half bucket, and I'll do it. But the problem is Aaron Rodgers' ball placement hasn't been the way that it was previously, which was, you know, uber elite for many, many years. And then in addition, when you don't get the half bucket and you don't have confidence in your wide receivers and your ball placement to be able to get there, then you have to hold the ball. And when you have to work backside to the field, now your offensive line has to hold up. And so those things are kind of compounding for the New York Jets offense. I do think that anytime you fire your head coach, I think you do get a kind of a jolt of energy. And I think that Ulbrich is the kind of coach who can give you a jolt of energy. So if the New York Giants came out and got much better play from their offense, this would be the week for the what they call the dead cat bounce. But I'm still hopeful that the Buffalo Bills defense and the stellar play of cornerback Christian Benford will be able to kind of help Aaron Rodgers feel a little bit less secure and make him hold that ball so the pass rush can get there.
And let's keep with the secondary there. I mean, Benford has been fantastic. Rasul Douglas has been basically right behind him in all terms of quality. We did see a rough patch there for rookie Cole Bishop last week, blowing a coverage that allowed Nico Collins to get past everybody. And the rare big play bomb against a Bills secondary that we've really not seen for a long time in a Sean McDermott defense. With everything going on there, Taylor Rapp now coming back and being healthy again after clearing concussion protocol, what has the overall secondary been looking like, though, for you through the first 5 weeks here, Bruce? Of course, the elite corner play, but everything in the secondary as a whole.
I think what you're seeing is that the significant value of Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde was not in the fact that there was elite athleticism. And so I know that everybody kind of knew that Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer's main value was in instinctual levels, and it was be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, but not a second sooner or you'll give it away. I think what you're starting to see is you're starting to see the main differences between excellence and competence on the back end. Because I think overall you've seen fine safety play, but you haven't seen that level of safety play. And that happens in those gigantic spike moments. If you think about it, how rare is it from a sample size standpoint that you can go as long as the Buffalo Bills did, and then all of a sudden you have this big play against your defense, you go, oh, that looks so unfamiliar. Like, that stuff happens all across the league all the time. And we just kind of got used to it just not happening against the Buffalo Bills. And then all of a sudden you think, wow, like, how rare is it that we could go that stretch of time and not give up a 60-yard touchdown? You have to be on point every single play or this kind of thing happens. And that's, I don't want to say we took it for granted. We kind of knew that that was the thing, but now we're seeing what it looks like in its absence with not having Jordan Poyer and not having Micah Hyde back there and knowing that that's kind of where their main value was brought, is not having that for a meaningful stretch of time. Passers were averaging a zero passer rating throwing to the deep middle of the field against the Buffalo Bills. And I always joked around that was a Micah Hyde stat. I still contend that Micah Hyde is one of the best deep ball defenders of the most recent generation of NFL football players. And now all of a sudden, you sub that out, and you have Cole Bishop, and he's a rookie, and, you know, Rasul Douglas was expecting inside help, and when he ran to the end zone, he turned around and was like, I think you missed that. And I think, you know, Cole Bishop obviously wishes he had that one back, but we knew this was going to happen with Cole Bishop. All the scouting reports coming out were that he was much better the closer you got him to the line of scrimmage. So this is just part of the learning curve, and if it happens once or twice, we understand that. It's part of the deal. I'm not going to hold Cole Bishop to Micah Hyde standards. That's probably unfair.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, first NFL action for him at all because he was hurt throughout the preseason. So it was 0-60 for Bishop, and you can see when a play like that happens, well, you know, welcome to the league, kid. Unfortunately, not in a good way. But one of the rookies that did show up on defense, and Bruce, allow me, I got to go get my petty hat real quick because I got to be super petty real quick. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I got it. Dwayne Carter,
yes,
is a player that some Bills fans were absolutely peeved that was on the team because they made this trade with Kansas City. Oh, man. Dwayne Carter was making plays last week, and some Bills fans don't even want him around. Huh. If only there was a trade that happened where the team tried to make themselves better in not just more than one position, Bruce.
I got to be honest, I appreciate your pedicap, and specifically with regards to Dwayne Carter. So pre-draft, there I went on record, that you can go back and search my social media, that a couple times I had responded to a mock draft and said, well, I had Dwayne Carter, so I like it. Like, that's the way it goes. Like, that's how I felt about Dwayne Carter coming up. And I think one of the things that you appreciated about Dwayne Carter is the energy level and the motor in which he plays the game. And that, you know, we talk a lot about cardio in other sports. We talk a lot about being able to wear people down with just constant waves of energy when it comes to other sports. Because you have such a stop and start level of the game with football, you don't really talk about it that much. Which is interesting because you know you're trying to replicate it. When coaches say they want to rotate their defensive line, they're essentially just trying to simulate people who have really good cardio, right? The idea that you can still be going a million miles an hour at the end of the third quarter, meanwhile, that offensive lineman has been playing, you know, 60 or 70 snaps, and that defensive lineman has only played 25 snaps, then you're essentially replicating what it would be like if you had excellent cardio and energy. Well, what if you just had excellent cardio and energy? Like, what if you could bring that same level of juice every single snap for 50 or 60 snaps? And that's one of the things I always really appreciated about Dwayne Carter. Now, he did play a little out of control at Duke, but I'd much rather have that than the alternative, which is, hey, dude, you got to get on your horse now. Like, we can't have you get stuck on the field in no huddle, and then all of a sudden we get gashed in the run game because you wore out. And that was never a concern with Dwayne Carter. So I enjoyed watching his, and I openly admit I have a bias toward fun. When I'm watching college prospects, I'm like, if it was fun, then there's a subconscious bias there that I'm going to probably rate you a little higher. So I'm a Dwayne Carter fan. I think he is one of those players who, you know, at a Duke defensive lineman, I don't think you can count on them coming into the NFL with a significant amount of maturity in their pass rush plan. You get him in the NFL, you get that mature mindset, that learner mindset in there with the natural gifts and with the energy level. You know, you turn up, you think this guy could be a good player for you. And I think it's kind of satisfying to see him get some snaps and see him start to make, I mean, almost at least one play a drive. We saw him where he showed up. And that's pretty satisfying. The fact that they were able to get that pick through the Worthy trade is just a feather in the cap and a good opportunity for you to be a little petty.
Yep. I mean, hey, man, sometimes you gotta do it. So, sometimes you take the high road. Today, I'm not taking any high roads. These last 2 weeks have stunk, Bruce. I'm taking the low road because it's easier right now. And I know it's the low road, and I can admit it. And I'm just going to do it. That said, there's another opportunity for me to be further petty because we just talked about how bad the Jets offensive line is, and no Ed Oliver means more Dwayne Carter. More Dwayne Carter means more fun. We like fun. Therefore, hopefully, we see another big play from Dwayne Carter wreaking havoc inside the trenches there, Bruce. Bills are getting healthier, though, overall. Taron Johnson might be coming back here soon enough. Terrell Bernard was back last week and immediately made an impact with an interception. It does look like, though, things might start to stabilize for this team overall here, Bruce, despite the slide that they've gone on the past 2 weeks.
I agree with you. I think there's two reasons, I think, when you look at the slide. The first one is that you're incredibly banged up on the defense, and that one looks like it's being alleviated. The second one is the one that's going to continue to be the narrative, and that is the Buffalo Bills receiving corps, especially as we get closer to the trade deadline. If you don't see the Buffalo Bills start to find consistent answers against man coverage and single high, the noise is going to get loud for players like Romeo Dubs or Devontae Adams. I mean, it's going to get loud at the trade deadline for, hey, you don't want to waste a year because you incorrectly guessed the way that your personnel was going to match up to specific schemes that you were probably going to face. And so I do think that the defensive part is going to get taken care of just by natural negative attrition, right? Getting those people back. Mm-hmm. But the offensive wide receiver, passing game, man cut, like that's going to continue to be the number one focus around this team until it is consistently in significant enough sample size proven that they have an answer.
Bruce, in the spirit of the opening bant from this morning, I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Howard Simon, and that is this. With the team as miserable as they had been the last 2 weeks, and I know the wheelhouse of which you're going to answer this a little bit too, what do you do, or what are some of your favorite things to do to step away when the team is miserable and it's like a little bit sad or irritating to watch them? What are your favorite outlets to escape sports misery?
Well, the first one is clearly dogs.
Yes.
Dogs are the best way to do it. So I'll post something on my social media and I'll post a picture of my dog and everyone will join in and post pictures of their dog and I'll scroll through that thread and I'll like all their pictures and I'll let them know that I saw them and that it mattered to me. And then other people can come to the thread and they can see pictures of other people's dogs. And I think that what you're seeing there when you do it is you're seeing dogs who don't know that your team lost. they just know that their owner is sad, and you wouldn't want them to be sad, right? So maybe you should take them for a walk or give them some pets or, you know, throw the ball with them or give them some treats or do something. And so I think that the number one thing is dogs. I think the number two thing, and I don't want to get too mushy and philosophical on this, but the number two thing is I think that how blessed I am that I get to see another Bills season. There are plenty of people right now in other areas of our country and other areas of the world right now who don't have the opportunities to even be upset about their mm-hmm. football team because they've got bigger fish to fry, not in a positive sense. And so, I mean, it's the ultimate first world problems issue is my team that I get the chance to root for and watch on Sundays or Mondays or Thursdays isn't as good as I'd like them to be. I mean, it's the ultimate first world problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really going to allow that to move the needle significantly for me because if I saw all there was to see in the universe, I would think this is pretty small stuff. So, yep, I'll allow myself to feel something for a few seconds and then I'll move on with my day.
Well, there you go, Bruce. I appreciate that. And that is very true. By the way, if you're on Twitter and you don't follow at the Bruce Exclusive, if the Bills do happen to lose, dog thread immediately after any loss, or, of course, the usual Bruce wisdoms or quips or even memes of sorts that Bruce will be able to deliver to you on a daily basis. So follow him on Twitter at The Bruce Exclusive. Listen to his podcast, The Bruce Exclusive, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts as well. How'd I do there, Bruce?
Dude, fantastic. I could not have plugged it better myself.
Well, Bruce, it's always an honor to be able to talk to you, my friend, and I always have fun having you on here. And hopefully when we speak next, they're not in a slide and things are on the up and up for the Bills.
I will take it.
Bruce, thank you as always and enjoy your weekend.
Thanks much. Have a good one.
You too. That's Bruce Nolan. That's Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive on the West Shore Hotline. Hey, you know what? We're here. We're hanging out. And pretty much that is what it is at this point. We do the Booty Cheek of the Week coming up next, and then we're going to shift our focus a little bit to the team on the ice, the Sabres, taking on Florida tonight at KeyBank Center. We'll talk with Paul Hamilton at the top of the hour at noon. You're listening to WGR.